looking back on the first 10 years of Arrow News Network and 24/7 real-time news. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome into the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest, as we look back over 10 years of Arrow News Network, is Jim Campbell, who is the CEO and editor-in-chief of ANN. And Jim, this 10th anniversary kind of snuck up.
It's like anything, it goes with aging. You're kind of glad you're here. You just really don't want to look at the process that got you there.
All right. Well, we actually need to do that today because...
Oh, yeah. You had to do that, didn't you?
Let's start about talking about the origins of Arrow News Network and tell us about the transition out of print into online new media and what prompted it and what the trials were at the time.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that the 10 years actually signifies the true nature of Arrow News, i.e. daily, real-time, 24/7, in other words, being a slave to the computer and so forth. Although in some form or another, we were working with the medium all the way back to 94. And as a matter of fact, I think the tail end of 93, as I recall, is about the first time any of our efforts showed up that way. But even to the point where in 94 we were doing some experimenting with daily news snippets from Oshkosh.
Well, now, this is going back to the day when most people who were online were running bulletin board systems, if people remember those.
Which, frankly, was our first attempts to put together something and experiment with the medium and learn a few things. Because, boy, talk about experimental. That's what it was all about in those days.
Well, let's talk about some of the early things that marked ANN. What were some stories you remember from those very early days?
It was interesting at the time because what it ultimately boiled down to was the fact that we saw no future in killing new trees with old news. That in the magazine business, our biggest problem was that the most timely we could possibly be was on the order of 90 days from the time you're able to put stories together, stitch it into a magazine, get it printed, get it distributed, put it in the mail, get it on the newsstand, so forth and so on. It was an extraordinarily inefficient process. And then on top of that, it was a process that really didn't favor the aviation industry. Any magazine publisher will tell you that they're competing or were competing in those days more and more with a number of different outlets and the vertically oriented markets like aviation or, for that matter, a number of other topics, boating, modeling, whatever, were having a tough time getting on the newsstand. And while we did okay, it was a constant fight to be able to get in front of people, whereas the World Wide Web, or the Wild Wild Web, is more properly known, gave us a tremendous amount of inspiration into what this media really could be. We took a look at everything and said, we love the features, but we'd really like to do a lot more news. And what would happen if aviation news became available 24/7 in real time? And so the latter part of November of 99, after a little bit of experimenting and some ramp-up, by that time we were involved in the newsletter as well as the publication each and every day of the Arrow News Network.
Wow. So, obviously 90-day deadline, print format, you're talking about filling in details on stories that anybody who cared had already heard long ago, maybe being able to fill in the details and offer some feature or analysis. Now you're into news. That has some particular implications for your personal schedule.
Well, for those of you who had lives, it would have made a difference. For those of us who live, breathe, eat, and sleep this stuff, who never had a life anyway, it was no big deal. So it was difficult at times, but at the same time, the nature of the web is portable. So you also can take this with you and work from any place in the planet. And the interesting thing is that ANN throughout its entire history has never had an office that was fully staffed by all the people who worked in it. Our staff has ranged from not only across the country, but across the world. All you really needed was an online connection and the work discipline to get things done on time and on schedule. And to work within the purview of the guidelines that everybody was given. But we've been working remotely with the folks since day one.
When we return, a look back at some of the most memorable stories covered by ANN since November of 1999. My guest is Jim Campbell. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, beginning what will be a multi-part series looking back over the first 10 years of Aero News Network with CEO and Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell. September 11th, 2001. 19 suicide bombers used hijacked airliners as missiles to attack the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and an unclear third target in Washington, D.C. Jim, that had to be a memorable day.
It was extraordinary. And as long as I live, I hope never to have to deal with a day like that, because the worst thing that we were dealing with was FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There was a tremendous amount going around in no uncertain terms. I remember writing that aviation as we knew it would never be the same after that day, and obviously that's been the point and the truth. But we were on this thing within seconds of the first impact, watched the second impact in real time, were reporting it. We had readers who were in the air. I remember one reader in particular in a 172 who was sending us pictures while both towers were still standing and burning. That came to us by email, and you know, we're getting details, we're corresponding with the FAA, the ground stop occurred, all the traffic was shut down, and we had that day and a number of days where we were wondering if the future of aviation had just been pretty much decimated. There was a very good chance that the future of aviation was about to grind to a complete and utter halt. And thankfully that part didn't happen, but a lot of very negative things for aviation have occurred simply because somebody took something as extraordinarily beautiful, useful, and versatile as aviation and turned it into a weapon.
Well, that brings us into 2002, because there were three stories that I picked out of the archives that seemed to be very related. One was that kid in Tampa who flew a 172 into a bank building. He killed himself, but he basically just broke a couple windows. The same year, a four-place experimental caught fire and ended up crashing into the Federal Reserve Bank building, where there were 100 people inside having a party. Again, fatal for the occupants of the aircraft. Nobody on the ground was injured, and the bank received superficial damage. And then, of course, the Transportation Security Administration came to be in 2002. And you called it at the time a hydra of still unknown dimensions and authority.
Good point. I wish I could take credit for that. One of our staffers at the time coined the term. But it's something we definitely agreed with, because we could see one of the biggest concern we had for TSA is that it had no endpoint. It was a mission statement with absolutely no containment. We knew that people were scared, that they were acting on fear, that they weren't thinking before, well, they weren't planning as they were thinking, but they were acting before they could plan. And the result that we see right now is is today's TSA, which is in many cases a lot of show and very little substance, at least of a positive nature. and what little substance we deal with on a regular basis happens to be pretty negative. We've got a lot of folks that are more interested in playing security than in actually putting together a cogent security plan.
Well, ANN called it one of Congress's knee-jerk reactions to the September 11th attacks. And I think that word Hydra really has been borne out in what has happened since. And frankly, a lot of it is not of the TSA's own doing, but it's of congressional mandate.
Absolutely. The interesting thing is we did an Arrow TV piece just a few weeks ago, with Congressman Micah, who at one point was very pleased to be able to take part in planning the origin of TSA, and who now, in no uncertain terms, is very unhappy with where it's gone and has said so, and to the extent that it has turned into a monster that has very little to do with what he had hoped for. And I think a number of people in Congress, if you put them right up against it, would have to say that TSA has gone well astray of what they had hoped for.
Well, obviously the saga continues. One of the other big stories of 2002 was that U.S. Airways and United Airlines both filed Chapter 11, and we're still dealing with the repercussions of that today.
Well, it was part of bankruptcy roulette, and the interesting thing was not just the fact that there was a failed business model clearly evident in the airline industry. It was the utter inhumanity of how that business model came apart, because when push came to shove, the first people to be thrown under the bus were those folks that built those companies. Pension plans were decimated. Jobs were decimated. And the interesting thing, still to this day, the only facet of those organizations that has had any sense of security or seems to have fared well under current airline management is literally the very high-end management itself, who are still involved in multi-million dollar bonuses and contracts and all kinds of goodies and bennies and so forth and so on, while the very hardworking people that built these airlines in many cases were streeted.
It's kind of hard to listen to a congressional hearing in which Skiles and Sullenberger are telling congressmen who appear to be realizing this for the first time that they both have second jobs. I mean, it's just amazing what happened to that industry.
Well, and not just that, but let's face it, it was the downfall of the airline industry as an efficient, fast, quasi-enjoyable way to get from point A to point B. Today's airlines look kind of like a Greyhound bus station. They're very depressing. Service is non-existent. They have become meat markets in the standpoint of that they're just herding the beef around. They really don't care much about how they do it. The overall concept of customer service has virtually disappeared. The seats are smaller, tighter, more cramped, and if you have a complaint, good luck in trying to get it resolved. Today's airline industry, as compared to what it was a little bit over a decade ago, is a very negative, very poor excuse for what it might have been.
Well, and the TSA experience hasn't added anything to the airline experience either.
No, and that's part of the problem, though, is that you have this self-perpetuating cycle of negativity based upon negativity. I mean, let's face it, from inside aviation, for those of us who at one point or another may have aspired to be airline pilots and saw the glamour of it, or be flight attendants or mechanics or to work in the business segment, there's very little about those industries now that's remotely attractive. And when some of the most obviously competent people in the business, and we'll go to Captain Sullenberger, flat out telling people this is not a job he'd recommend to the people he loves and cares for anymore, that's when you know it's sunk about as low as it can get.
When we continue the conversation tomorrow, we'll look back on the Columbia disaster on February 1st, 2003, a day when, as chance would have it, a brand new ANN associate editor was in his first day on the job, directly under the point of the shuttle's in-flight breakup. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.